Hey, what's up, guys? It's your host, Lopez, and I just want to say thank you for tuning into this episode today. If you're on Facebook and want to show some support with a like on the page, you can find it by going to facebook.com/behindcloseddoorspodcast or just searching Behind Closed Doors Podcast. You can also find it on Twitter at the BCD Podcast and on Instagram at the Behind Closed Doors Podcast. Last but not least, follow the podcast on Spotify by searching Behind Closed Doors in the podcast section to see all the amazing upcoming interviews I have to come. Every Sunday, I post a picture of a band with a hint of who my next guest is. Then on Tuesday, I post a brief clip from our video interview with a good highlight of our conversation we had. And lastly, post the new episode up on Spotify every Thursday morning. Now, on to the episode. John Humphrey from Cedar. Nice. How are you, dude?
Good, man. Some technical issues, but we got it.
Hell yeah. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me today. Just want to give that right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
So I see you got a bunch of records and whatnot back there. What all you got? You got some platinum records back there on the wall, I see?
Yeah, a few. My Hall of Fame for Cedar. Some platinum plaques back there for Disclaimer 2 and Finding Beauty there. Punisher soundtrack, and yeah, some awards from here in the US and all over the world.
Nice, man. Where'd you grow up at?
I grew up in Oklahoma City, and it's still my home, actually. I have a family. I've been married for over 20 years, and I've raised my kids here, and it's home. So whenever I'm not on the road and touring and doing, of course, we're all home right now because of the pandemic and everything, haven't toured in quite a while. Certainly miss that. But whenever I'm home, home base is Oklahoma City.
So you're just born and raised and still living in Oklahoma City?
Yeah, man. My family's here. We lived in Dallas for a short time. I lived there actually when I auditioned for Cedar back in 2003 and joined them. My wife was pregnant at the time with our second child. And so we moved back home because Cedar, especially back then, was touring so much. Our kids were pretty little, and so we needed my wife needed some help taking care of the boys. And so since I was gone on the road all the time, my family and her parents kind of helped out when the kids were little.
Right on, man. Now, is if I'm not mistaken, Oklahoma is the state that has the most tornadoes. They call it Tornado Alley, right?
It's Tornado Alley. Yeah.
How many bad storms do you usually get a year?
Man, it's in the city it'll be, you know, some years it's one, some years it can be two or three. Now, all over the state, there's a lot of rural Oklahoma too, a lot of farmland still. And so tornadoes hit out there and not really put us in harm's way. I will say, it seems like the tornadoes weren't as bad as they are now when I was a kid. I mean, I've grown up with the sirens going off and, you know, homes usually had storm cellars. And that was pretty much, you know, pretty normal for being a kid growing up in Oklahoma. But it seems like starting about 2000, man, we've had some of these massive, you know, historic, you know, F5, you know, category tornadoes. And I swear it wasn't that bad when I was a kid. So it can get pretty scary. And, you know, luckily I haven't lost any friends or family or anything myself. But yeah, it can be kind of hectic around here during the spring season, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I'm in Indiana, and we don't typically get really bad like tornado storms out here. I mean, we get like pretty good sized hail in like the springtime and the summertime, and we'll get some dark clouds, you know, and pretty windy weather. But I mean, I've never in my lifetime seen an actual tornado touch down, which I'm sure you have out there in Oklahoma.
Yeah, actually, I've not witnessed one like from my porch or from my backyard or anything. Definitely, you know, they'll send helicopters and storm chasers out, and you know, it's pretty normal for local TV news anyway to break into TV and tell you of a warning or the sirens to go off to notify you to kind of check out the news, and they'll tell you where the path is going. Especially with technology now, they're pretty advanced on that. It can really give you a pretty fair amount of warning, so you can at least try to get to a seller or to a friend's seller if you don't have
Right.
one yourself. But yeah, we get all four seasons here. We have snow and ice this winter. It's like below freezing today, and then we have really hot summers. But yeah, we've got some tornadoes in spring sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We got some snow out here too, and it's probably about like 4 degrees this morning over here in Indiana. So
Oh wow, yeah. Yeah, it's cold right now.
Your thing that you do is drums. What influenced you to want to start to play the drums?
Gosh, I would say when I was in middle school, the two things happened. First, MTV came into my life as a kid. I was an 80s kid, grew up in the 80s, and cable TV and MTV came into my life. And I was in middle school, and there was a drum corps that would play at pep assemblies and at football games. And it was just a drum corps. It was a couple of snares and bass drums. I just loved the sound of the cadences. And, you know, I grew up going to OU Sooners games and just the marching band. And I loved marching bands. I loved drums, especially snare and drum corps. Then, but MTV and rock and, you know, rock and roll came into my life when I was about 12 or 13. And it just made for a perfect storm. Both those things happened. I initially was sort of self-taught about that time. I auditioned for the drum corps and I got into it, which I loved. I started to read music and then I joined band also at the same time. So all through middle school and high school, I was in marching band and concert band, and which I loved. And with MTV and loving rock and roll, man, I just begged my parents for a year and a half to get me a drum set because they knew at an early age, they noticed that I really loved and appreciated music. So my mom started me at a piano, and that didn't, you know, interest me a whole lot. I at least got a little foundation of music theory from, you know, starting out at piano, but it was really rock and roll. I tried guitar for a little bit. It was just acoustic guitar, never had electric guitar, but it was drums for me. So I begged my parents for a year and a half to get a drum set because they were like, look, we've tried guitar, we've tried piano. These
Right.
instruments aren't cheap. If you're not going to play, I'm not going to keep buying you this stuff. And I said, please, please, I promise, I love drums. Finally, Christmas, when I was 13, first drum set. And it's, you know, I haven't turned back, I haven't looked back, you know.
What drum set was that? What brand was it?
It was a Ludwig. It was a classic vintage Ludwig, 1966, mahogany shell, silver sparkle. It was a guy in college had left him with his parents, and there. I wish I had left them just as they were. They had like classic calfskin drum heads still on them. I mean, these are all like super valuable things now.
Yeah.
But it was the 80s, and I wanted the ebony heads on the bottom, and you know, when it looked like Frankie Benali from Quiet Riot or something. So I'm, you know, putting electric tape and stuff all over it and rocking it up. But I wish I had left it just as it was. But yeah, it was a set of vintage Ludwigs. They were awesome.
You still have that kit now?
I don't,
No.
unfortunately. It was a smaller kit, and I regret that as well. But you know, because I had no money, so if I wanted a new drum set, I wanted to get into double bass eventually, I had to trade it in and then put it with a little money, you know, as you
Yeah.
do, and just kind of move up. So that's definitely a regret letting that one go.
Now, what kind of music did influence, like music influences did you have when you actually got your drum kit? Like you said that you were into MTV. Now, what type of stuff were you kind of looking for when you were playing?
Yeah, I was a rock guy for sure. I mean, it was Alex Van Halen. I think Van Halen was one of the earliest influences. Kiss, I was a huge Kiss, still a big Kiss fan. So it was Peter Criss, a lot of the rock guys. And so when I was about 83, there was this huge movement with heavy metal, basically. You know, bands like Def Leppard and Motley Crue and everything came out. You know, Van Halen obviously had been going for a while, but these bands were like larger than life and just so huge on MTV. But it was definitely the rock drummers. So I would say Tommy Lee and Frankie
Right.
Benali
Yep.
from Quiet Riot, Alex Van Halen, and Tommy Aldridge, and you know, and all those guys, those rock guys that really, you know, I wanted to play like.
Definitely. Yeah. Did you ever get into Metallica back in those times?
Sure. Yeah. I loved. In fact, I'm a big vinyl collector, and they just re-released at Walmart colored vinyl versions of all the classic Metallica albums. No kidding. Ride the Lightning and Master Puppets are like two of my favorite Metallica albums.
Yeah. 100%.
So finally have those on vinyl again. I haven't had them. I think I had them on cassette back in the day. I don't think I ever had the vinyl.
Now, what kind of drum set do you play on now? And do you have any endorsements?
Yes, I play Ludwig right now. And I'm about to announce a new deal with a drum company I'll be working with, which is Bill Ludwig's new company. He's formed WFL3. Yeah, it's a small company. He, the Ludwig family was bought out by Con Selmer, 30 years ago. And he worked, at Ludwig in its heyday. He was there in the late 70s, all through the 90s. He worked with Alex Van Halen. He worked with Bonham. He worked with Ringo Starr. Anyway, I was very honored. He contacted me directly through a mutual friend and asked if I'd like to consider, endorsing his new drums. And they're classic maple shells. They sound amazing. But so they're WFL3 or William Ludwig III. And, they sound awesome. And I play Savian cymbals, Vic Firth drumsticks, and Evans drum heads. I've been with Savian, since the early 90s, early to mid 90s. Been with them a long time.
Now, I hear Ludwig's a pretty hard company to get endorsed by.
Yeah. I mean, they have a limited roster and been very honored to have worked with them. And again, it was, kind of blown away to be contacted by Bill, being an actual family member of Ludwig. And he was the same age his great, I guess his grandfather started Ludwig. He was 59 years old, and he was 59 when he started this WFL3. So kind of a cool story.
Yeah, but that's awesome. Now, how did you land that deal with Ludwig?
So originally with Ludwig, I had a mutual friend who had been at D-Drum for a long time, started working with Ludwig and just talked to me at NAMM. That's been 6 or 7 years ago. And then I was with Ludwig. So I was with Pearl when I first kind of was in a band, when the Nixons were signed to MCA, my first band. That's when I was finally endorsed. And Pearl, I was with Pearl for a long time, and then D-Drum, and then Ludwig.
Okay. Now, are you still with the Nixons today?
So yeah, the Nixons reunited in 2017. So okay. I was with those guys from 92 to 2000. There's an interesting segue where the being in the Nixons and the sound engineer, a good friend of mine, started working for Seether in 2003, and he's sort of the connection that got me hooked up with Seether, got me the audition, and so the Nixon story kind of overlaps into the Seether story, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, the Nixons were my first band.
And what caused that breakup from 2000, you said, to 2007?
Yeah, to 2000, actually.
Okay.
Because I joined Seether in 2003. So the band, the Nixons, the history is, we were all from Oklahoma, and we worked, really hard to build a regional following. Back then, we could tour and did tour, our part of the country, Oklahoma and Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, and built this following. Playing colleges and clubs on college campuses and venues. And Dallas had amazing music scene, Deep Ellum back in the mid 90s, amazing music scene, a lot of up and coming bands like the Toadies and Tripping Daisy. And it was kind of a cool scene for music. And then you had the hard rock and metal scene, which the Nixons could kind of go into a bit. There was, The Basement, which was a great heavy metal rock club. Which is where Pantera started. And, Dime and Vinny would come out and see the Nixons play when play the Basement. So we play Trees and Deep Ellum. And yeah, so it was a really, really cool music scene. And it's an interesting story because we got a song on local radio, basically a song called Sister. We sold 15,000 copies of a CD. We were basically selling out of the back of our van and in local record stores. And it got the attention of a major label, because back then in the 90s, especially, the goal was to get a major label record deal. And that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I was going to say the song Sister. I don't know if you're a Spotify or an iTunes guy. But on Spotify, it has 5 million streams on Spotify. Did you guys ever expect that to be such a popular song when you first started with it?
No, not at all. Not at all. And the singer wrote it. It was truly very close to his sister, and she had moved to the West Coast. And, you know, so lyrically, it's really an honest story and the way that it came about. And then the singer Zach brought it to the band. Then we worked it up, you know, as a band, and it was just another song at the time. But it's pretty amazing to think how it's connected. And we've had all kinds of people over the years come up and like, you know, at the same time every day, me and my sister listen to this song to, you know, to remind each other, you know, of each other, and, you know, great, great sort of stories. And so the song just isn't the band's anymore. It's, you know, it's other people's song, and that's pretty magical. And like you said, to have 5 million streams, it just blows me away.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. And so the band, you know, disbanded in 2000. It was sort of this classic story where we had a major label deal and Sister was a huge hit. And our second album did pretty good. And then there were some changes at Universal and we were dropped from the label. And that band worked really hard. It was like 8 years of, you know, 300 plus shows a year. And I think it was a culmination of being a little burned out. And I think we just wanted to try some new things. And so we never announced that the band broke up. We just said, you know, just kind of went our separate ways. We kept in touch. And then, like I said, ended up with the Seether gig. And so anytime Seether would be touring and I would be in Nashville or I'd be in Utah or whatever, the guys from the Nixons, friend, you know, would still come out to see me play. So there's still a lot of camaraderie. But after 15 years or so, I just kind of gave up hope there would ever be a reunion show or anything. And in 2017, we did a couple of shows, which went really well, Oklahoma City and Dallas. And that's just sort of snowballed into new music and into the band, you know, doing some one-offs, doing shows. And so whenever Seether wasn't playing, if I could, you know, fit it into my schedule, then, you know, the Nixons will do some shows here and there.
That is awesome. So just... The guys came and still supported you and showed that, you know, that the true friendship was still there and the brotherhood. And then that kind of stemmed back to making you guys get back together because, you know, if you guys would have just went your complete separate ways and you guys would have lost contact, obviously the Nixons probably wouldn't have came back together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all went on to have kids and, you know, and Seether, I mean, I went from 300 plus shows a year type band right back into it. I mean, Seether is, you know, the first 15 years I was with them, it was nonstop touring.
Yeah.
and so I, you know, it was like I just unpacked my bag like last week after 17 years or whatever, you know, it took this pandemic for me to unpack my bag because, you know, Seether just tours. I mean, that's just what we do. And I'm a musician and I love being in a band that does, you know, that does that because I love playing. I miss it so much, man. I'm really hopeful things can turn around and live shows can start coming back.
That's what I'm hoping for. I see there's a lot of tours that are kind of planned by the end of like the fall time of this year. And hopefully that, you know, those can follow through, but yeah, you joined in Seether in 2003, which a year later you guys released the album Disclaimer 2. Was that just a reissue or did you guys like resound, like retrack everything?
So what we did is the first thing I did with the band was Broken, which Broken was an acoustic track on Disclaimer. And so the label wanted us to do that sort of epic thing for the Punisher soundtrack, which was the duet with Amy Lee. And that song took off. It was just a bonus track, not even a bonus track for us. It was just on the soundtrack. And we were supposed to go in and start recording what was to be the next album, full new album, which would have been eventually it became Karma and Effect. But at the time, we just tracked Broken, finished it, mixed it, and it took off. So we went overseas for 9 months and opened for Evanescence and it was sort of our foot in the door internationally. It was a huge hit for us and it did really well. And so what they decided to do was remix Disclaimer. And then I played on a handful of bonus tracks, sort of B-side stuff, a song called Cigarettes. There was another soundtrack song called Sold Me and Broken and some other tracks. So we remixed it, added some bonus tracks. I think there was a live DVD added to some pressings, and that became disclaimer two.
How did your audition with Seether go, and how did you go about even auditioning with those guys?
Sure. So again, that sound engineer friend of mine started working for Seether in 2003. I wasn't with the band at the time, and I was living in Dallas, and I was out and ran into him, and he was like, "Man, I'm with this band. They're a great band. And are you doing anything? Are you playing with anybody?" And I'm like, "No." And he goes, "I think you would really fit this band. Have you heard of Seether?" And I had heard Fine Again. I'm like, yeah, I'm familiar with them. I know that song. He goes, "Well, man, I'm telling you, you would be a really good fit for them. They're having trouble finding a drummer." And they had a session guy play on Disclaimer, and they had some hired gun kind of guys playing with them. But just, you know, have you ever seen that documentary, Hired Gun?
Uh-uh.
It's really interesting because Rob Zombie says it best. It's, you know, there's a lot of great musicians out there, a lot of technically capable musicians. But really being in a band, you live on a bus, you're in a small space for a lot of the time. You spend more time with each other than you do your own families. So it's about the hang, really. It's about getting along.
Yeah.
And so it's not only musically finding a vibe, it's personality wise. And anyway, he thought I would make a good fit. So he set it up. They were going to audition me and I think two or three other people. It was in Dallas. They told me to go pick up Disclaimer and learn four songs. I learned the whole album. I just went ahead and I wanted to be prepared. I mean, I really liked that album anyway. And I think it's probably because I had to learn it and wanted to learn it. But it's kind of interesting. It's the only Seether album where I'm not on it. So I have this interesting perspective of being on the outside. And I'm a big fan of that record. I think it's a great, great record.
Oh, yeah.
But I auditioned. So I went in and they were bummed. I remember Sean had his ball cap on and his kind of down all around his eyes. He was, you know, they had been drinking some beer. They were pissed. They were not in a good mood. And he kicked off. There's a song on Disclaimer called Pride. And it's kind of a different time signature. It goes like 3-4 back to 4-4. Anyway, it's kind of a tricky song. And I think he wanted to get it out of the way real quick. Like, is this guy going to be able to keep up or we're going to be done?
Right.
And I was able to keep up. And then he called out another song and another song. And they pretty much hired me on the spot. So that, I can't believe it now. That was October of 2003. So, 17 years or something. It's crazy.
And then I'm assuming that their mood kind of shifted from being in an upset to a little bit more of a joyful mood after they
were like, absolutely. Yeah. It went from being pissed off to, hey, you want a beer?
Yeah. <You know? laughs> That's, what a good way, you know, that's a little reassuring, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the song Fake It has 217 million streams, which is huge.
Wow.
On Spotify. Wow. Yeah, it was number one on Billboard on, I think it was the Billboard Hot Mainstream Rock Tracks, and it reached 56 on the Billboard Hot 100 and certified platinum by the RIAA. That song is still a great success for you guys. Now, when you guys recorded that song, did you guys have any idea that with that, again, did you think it was going to be a great success like that? Or did you just think that it was just going to be another song off an album?
Yeah, you never know. I know that I felt good about the song. I remember Sean putting it together. It had that kind of swing feel. And I think he said the setting on his drum machine for the demo that he gave us was, it was like Alley Cat is what it was called. It was like a swing, just to kind of give that, you know, the feel so that I could listen to it and then kind of, you know, figure out what I was going to do on the drums. Yeah. I mean, I'm just blown away just, you know, how, first of all, how it turned out so good. And then to have it, you know, you never know how a song's going to be received. You hope people like it. You know, the label was like, this is a great track. This needs to be a single. Okay. And we made a fun video. We had a lot of fun making that video. It was sort of over the top and back in the heydays, you know, making some crazy videos. And you know, the stars sort of lined up for us on that track and it did really well for us. But again, man, I take nothing for granted. You hope something does well. You hope people connect with it. But when it happens, it still is just amazing to see and to have happen, you know.
And runner up to that song is the song Remedy, and that has 118 million streams. Can you recall the writing process with you guys and that song in the studio?
Yeah, Sean had sort of fully demoed that. He kind of put that one together himself and then showed the demo to me and Dale and doing that track. And again, you had a great feeling about that. You just, you know, you didn't know. I like Karma and Effect a lot. That's that, it's off that album. A lot of those songs, Because of Me and I'm the One, those are some songs that we were playing live on that tour that I was telling you about when we opened for Evanescence, just to have some new material in the set because they had been touring Disclaimer for 2 years and just wanted some new songs. So we were playing these songs live and they're like doing really well. But I have a lot of great memories making that. But Remedy was like a kind of a song completed, and Sean showed it to us and presented it to us. And we just wanted to do it justice, man, because I think, you know, that song I felt really good about for sure, even from the demo stage of it, you know.
Yeah, it was definitely, I know we had that. Gosh, I want to say it was Remedy, either before you had joined with Fine Again, or it might have even been Fake It, but I know every Friday night in high school when we were playing football, they always had that as on our warm-up track CD list. So,
oh, nice.
It definitely stuck with me on that. So every time I hear those songs, it just makes me think of Friday Night Lights for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, get the team pumped up for the game.
Yeah, get us all ready to go. Yeah, we had it blaring in the locker rooms and on the big PA out on the, you know, when we were warming up on the field and everybody was hearing it. So yeah, it was pretty cool to be able to actually, you know, talk to who somebody's had part of that song, and just takes me back a little bit. It's crazy.
That's cool. That's great.
Wow. So you guys recently released the music video for Bruised and Bloodied. What was it like that day for recording on set for that music video?
It was interesting, right? Because it was made, we decided to do this one, you know, during this pandemic. So it's interesting. We had tracked the new album and completed it January of 2020. So it was done, had just done, you know, been completed, and we were about to, we had already made plans. We were going to start touring in like April, May. Pandemic hit in March and everything just changed. Everything, the world went upside down. So it's like, what do we do? Do we push off the album? Do we go ahead and release it? Do we wait? We decided to go ahead and release it. We pushed it back a bit. We did that in August. And then Dangerous was the first video. And since we couldn't get together, we did an animated video for Dangerous and Beg. Some cool, you know, animation. It was really cool. But for Bruised and Bloodied, we want to be a band, be a performance video and be what we, you know, and do our thing. And it's just cool to be a, you know, to get to be a band and get together. But it was very safe. They had us do on the site, you know, tests. It was a little, you know, finger prick, little blood sample. They could tell you in 10 minutes if you're positive or not. And they did that for the band and crew. So can you imagine, you know, flying to Nashville and being there and like, John, I'm sorry, you're positive, my friend.
Right, you know? You got to go home.
Yeah, you got to go home, buddy.
Oh,
so there'd be
God.
Like a cardboard cutout of the drummer for the video or something.
Yeah.
Been hilarious. Man. But speaking yeah, they yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, speaking of that album, what was the feedback that you guys actually got from that?
The album? Yeah, it was well received. I mean, again, it just blows me away, you know, to put out a new album and people just, you know, Dangerous went number one, you know, mainstream rock. And it's really amazing.
Yeah, definitely. Is there a favorite song in your opinion from your guys' material?
From all of our material, God, that's really hard. I would say for the new album, I really like a song called Wasteland. And it's really cool. And it might be hopefully the next single following Bruised and Bloodied, possibly. But I love that song, Wasteland, off the new album. But it's funny. It's like I was telling you, Disclaimer, I'm not on that album. So I'm like a fan of that album, which is kind of different because I'm not playing it. I always loved Gasoline. And it was a show starter for years and years. And it was like, it set the barometer for the night. It was like the first song I learned. I have, you know, so a special place in my heart for Gasoline. So I like Gasoline. It's like one of my favorite songs, especially live.
Now let's talk about some live performances. For anyone that hasn't had a chance to see Seether yet, what is the Seether show all about?
Man, we're just, we're a rock band. No tracks, no added supplements. It's the three and four guys now with Corey that are on stage, you know, bad notes and all, that's us. And, you know, we've toured relentlessly, and I think we're a solid unit. We're a tied band, and there's no messing with us when we get up there on stage and do what we do. And it's no thrills, you know, as far as pyro and production or anything. It's just the band. It's about the music. Sean doesn't really talk very much in between songs. He likes to let the music do that. And we're just a, you know, a real, you know, it's a garage band on a big stage. I mean, we're just, it's very real. And again, very proud to say we don't use tracks or anything. It's the band, the full sound. But I think when we're hitting on all cylinders and doing our thing, man, there's nobody who can top us, you know?
Definitely. Do you recall playing at Chicago Open Air in 2017?
Yes. Yes.
So let me pull it up real quick. So Friday night Kiss had played, and then Rob Zombie was, you know, Kiss was the headliner for that Friday. And then Saturday was Korn. And then you guys played after Clutch. And then after you guys, Godsmack had played. What was your experience like playing a festival like that?
Gosh, man, I always loved playing festivals. It's a chance to play with bands that, you know, that we don't usually play with. And I love Korn. I'm friends with Ray Lazier, the drummer, known him for years. And I'm also a big Kiss fan, because I remember that they played on a different night, and I was bummed because we had a show like that night before, so we couldn't be there for the show. But I was so excited to be part of that festival. But yeah, man, anytime we play a festival, it's really cool, because you're playing with bands, especially with a lineup like that, that you're also a fan of. So just as soon as you're done playing, you know, you want to run out and watch whoever else is going to be playing, you know, because I'm still a fan of music, man. It's the reason I got into this. And there's a lot of bands I admire, and I want to go watch music just as much as I want to play it sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's why I empathize with everyone, man. You know, I miss seeing shows. I miss playing shows. I miss all of it, you know.
Yeah, these live performances are cool. Like the streaming, you know, that a lot of bands are doing is pretty cool, but it doesn't really amount to what it is to actually be able to have that loud amp pumping, and, you know, you can hear every bass drum kick just pounding your chest. It just doesn't compare.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the live streams have been very cool, and even the Nixons, we're getting ready to do one. And Cedar did one back in August, and at least, you know, we can be a band, and it feels like you're on stage. You can have some production and stuff, but yeah, you don't have the energy of the crowd. And that's a big part of the whole thing, right? It's a cycle. It's a give and take, and it comes from the crowd. So the live stream is a great outlet for the bands, and I hope the fans appreciate it. I know I've watched a few and have enjoyed them a lot, but yes, there's nothing that can take the, you know, replace the feeling of being at a show. And like you said, that kick drum, that low end, moving your chest, and the hair standing up on the back of your neck because of the excitement of a show about to start. There's nothing to replace that. I mean, it's just impossible.
Now, when you guys are on tour, I know every band has their different, you know, routine that they go through and whatnot. So for you, what's a day like in the life for you when you are on tour?
It's pretty boring, actually. You know, I'll get up in the morning and roll into the venue. We travel by bus. So we have a bunk, you know, we each have a bunk, and there's a band bus, and then the crew has a bus. And I sleep great on a bus. I will say it took me half a year to a year to get used to being home in my own bed. I'm so used to that rocking motion and that sound. You know, I will say the key to a good tour is to have a great bus driver, because nothing worse than rumble strips and horns blaring and crap going off in the middle of the night and you're not getting any sleep. You know, you watch your band get into it and break up while they're on tour, and behind it all is a horrible bus driver. But the key is a good bus driver. But yeah, we tour by bus, and I sleep really well on a bus. I'll roll into the venue, and the crew is just starting to set things up, maybe, you know, getting the stage, and then equipment is starting to roll in. I'll shower. Maybe there's a radio station visit in the afternoon. Maybe there's an interview. Maybe there's a phoner, you know, and then we'll do a sound check mid-afternoon, 2-3 o'clock. And then there would be, right after, like a meet and greet with fans, be a VIP meet and greet, maybe about 4 or 5 o'clock. then maybe catering, you go to dinner and have some food and kind of, and then sort of the calm before the storm, right? You go back to the, in my case, back to the bus or the dressing room, just kind of chill. We have an entertainment system in the dressing room. It's a portable system that has its own road case, and it has a TV, has a stereo, speakers, music. So the guys can either play video games, or we watch TV, we'll watch Netflix, or we'll, you know, watch music videos. But before the show, we throw on some tunes and we're, you know, kind of getting pumped up in the dressing room. And that's usually Pantera, you know, or something to really kind of get us in the mode. And then, you know, you hit the stage, you know, 9:30 or 10, 90 minute set, you know. And you're usually, I feel great after I play. For me, it's like a workout. What I do, drumming is so physical. You're sweating and you're kind of getting all that angst and energy and everything out. And I'm so relaxed after the end of a show. I just love it. I'll shower and maybe eat dinner after the show or eat a little bite and then, you know, back to the bunk and rinse and repeat for the next day. You know, it's a bit of Groundhog Day. You wake up and it's a different city, different place, but it's the same sort of, you know,
yeah,
routine really.
Now, what are some of the drummers or just any influences that you had growing up that you actually got to meet?
Oh gosh. I got to meet Tommy Aldridge. I'm friends with Joe Hoekstra, the guitar player. And, he was friends with a friend of mine. Anyway, we went to go see Whitesnake, and then I finally got to meet Tommy, which was amazing. I have a lot of respect for Dave Grohl, and I've had the opportunity to meet him a couple of times and just talk music. I actually talked about Tommy Lee with Dave Grohl, you know, which was just kind of surreal.
Yeah.
Just completely surreal. And so, you know, had the chance to really meet some heroes and just people that I admire. You know, we had a chance to tour with Audioslave. You know, ooh, Chris Cornell and the guys from Rage. And that was an amazing time and tour, you know. Yeah, a lot of great memories. And, you know, I had an opportunity to meet and perform with some heroes. We played with Metallica in South Africa, which, you know, see, there's like one of the biggest, if not the biggest rock band to ever come out of that country. And we did these huge soccer stadiums, these huge stadiums back in South Africa with Metallica. And you haven't lived until you're on stage, you're playing your heart out, and you look over and Lars and James are watching you play, you know.
Crazy.
It just rattles you, absolutely. But, I mean, it's one thing for me to rock out and watch Metallica, but to look over and have them watching us, watching you, it's surreal. Because, again, man, I'm a fan too, and things like that still blow me away.
Yeah, because you go from seeing them when you're what, 12, 13, watching them on MTV, and then you're playing a show in the set, and next thing you know, like you said, you look over and they're just kick back watching you, and you're, you know, arms reach from them. You're just thinking like, I never would have thought.
No, not at all. And James Hetfield, in fact, helped me with my monitors. I was having problems with my monitors, and I was trying to get our monitors guy his attention. He's over to the side, and I'm waving and stuff. And James is taps him on the shoulder and he points at me and he's like, I think he's trying to talk to you. He's trying to turn it up. You know, you're like, this is where am I? Right. What is going on right now?
Now, what's the craziest thing that you've experienced on tour, whether it was something that you saw or something that's just happened?
Man, there's been some funny times, a lot of crazy stuff, you know, shooting fireworks off with the Nixons. This was back in our RV days. It was 4th of July, and we had stopped at a stand and bought a ton of fireworks, and we had these pop bottle rockets and stuff we were firing off, and the RV had like a mesh screen door that you just kind of closed and had the main door open while a couple people were inside watching us outside fire off the fireworks. Anyway, one goes rogue and flying into that screen window and catches fire. And, wow, you know, luckily we got it out and the RV didn't burn to the ground, but, I mean, that was just goofing off and just crazy stuff, you know, just kind of funny.
Now, if you guys with Seether were to do a cover, what would you want that cover to be?
Gosh, man. You know, we've done some pretty cool ones. I'm really proud of how Careless Whisper turned out. That was kind of a, and that was a total fluke. That was a Valentine's Day thing for iTunes, and not being a lovey-dovey kind of band, Sean's like, let's do Careless Whisper and let's make it heavy. And that was great. We went into Electric Lady Studios in New York City on a day off, and we tracked that thing in a day, and it took off. That was kind of a fluke. Wasn't supposed to happen. We did another acoustic iTunes session where we did Frank Sinatra, Got You Under My Skin. It turned out really cool. We did it sort of this dark kind of mellow version. It kind of made the lyrics almost creepy in a way, Got You Under My Skin. And it turned out really cool. So, you know, anytime you can take a song and sort of reinvent it, kind of make it your own, I think that's kind of cool. I'd love to do another, you know, One Cold Night, another acoustic live album. I think Seether's music, you know, transposes really well to acoustic. And we, you know, did a Pearl Jam cover, Immortal, My Immortal in that song. So anyway, it would be cool to, Immortality, sorry. It would be cool to do, you know, something like that again, and maybe, you know, pick a couple of songs. I don't know, a Bowie song or something, and just kind of make it Seether, you know.
You guys recently did like a kind of like a quarantine jam. It was 2 weeks ago that you guys had done this. It was when you guys did Fine Again and you guys did the full band acoustic.
Oh, yeah. Now,
was that the only song that you guys jammed out and recorded, or did you guys jam out to a lot more and that was just the only song you recorded?
Yeah, Fine Again. And I want to say they released Dangerous, and we did three or four songs. So those were done sort of remotely. So I'm playing a cajon that's here at, you know, at my music room here at my house. And then the guys, Sean was at his home studio, and then they put that together. And so that was fun. That was fun too. That was sort of, even before we did the video for Bruised and Bloodied, we had kind of put those together. So yeah. I performed, you know, did the cajon and did some percussion stuff for that. And that I was really, that turned out pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was kind of cool. Kind of something different. And again, anytime we can, because we're used to touring so much. I mean, so just to do anything to kind of be a band or be in the studio, or even if it's do some acoustic versions of stuff from home, you know, I'll take it, man, because I miss playing so much.
What's a favorite tour that you've done in the past?
Oh, gosh, man. Attack, old merch girl, had actually posted a photo. It was from a tour back in 07. It was Crossfade. Ooh. It was us and Dark New Day, which was Clint and Corey Lowry, their band, after Clint left Seven Dust for a short time. And that, I have to say, was like one of the best tours. It was supposed to be something like a month to 6 weeks worth of dates, and we ended up extending the thing to like 4 months, 4 or 5 months. And it was an amazing tour. We just, everybody got along. There were no egos. Everybody, we would hang out after, have cookouts and parties and drink, and just, you know, everybody got along so well. The shows were awesome because, you know, it was just everybody watched each other and supported, you know, like, man, have a great show. Wow, you guys really brought it tonight. We got to step it up, you know. it was good for the fans and it was good for us. And those are those rare instances. I mean, I've had a lot of great memories, you know, with Audio Slave and bands that were cool to us, and nothing wrong with that. But this was truly like a family sort of thing with Crossfade and Dark New Day. We got along so well. So somebody had just posted a picture, and it's just sort of an overhead shot of us just hanging out afterwards. And you could see it on everyone. Everybody's just having a great time hanging out, you know, and that was one of those rare instances where everybody got along, and the shows were great. And the after parties were, you know, were just as great too.
Yeah. That'd be a huge good lineup that I'd love to go see Crossfade and Seether for sure.
Yeah, man. I miss Crossfade. Love to see him again.
What have you guys been up to since COVID?
Gosh. So for Seether, we did a live stream in August. And like you said, we did those acoustic things remotely. And we just did a video for Bruised and Bloodied. So I was in Nashville last week. We're doing some unplugged versions of a couple of songs off the new album. Yeah, so I'm hoping, I think those are going to turn out really cool. Just sort of a different sort of vibe on those songs. And again, like I said, Seether, I feel the music really kind of transposes to acoustic really well, sort of unplugged. I mean, you can kind of tell, you know, a song at its core, if it's just played on acoustic guitar and it sounds good, it usually is an indication it's a pretty good song. And so not to, you know, toot our own horn, I'm pretty proud of it. And so we recorded two unplugged versions of those songs. It was great to just kind of see the guys and be in a studio. So we're working on those and mixing those up. And I'm not too sure what we'll do with those quite yet, but it was just something to have in the can, you know? And,
yeah.
And I think it'll definitely be released at some point and it will be really cool. And then for the Nixons, the Nixons are getting ready to do a live stream. So you're really excited. So there's a production company here in Oklahoma City, Toucan Productions. He's a friend of mine. He does big shows and touring. He has, you know, sets and shows, lighting and production in Las Vegas and bands on tour. And so right now he's been having like some bands and DJs come in and they'll do like Facebook Live stuff or whatever, and some live streams. But he invited us to come perform and full on production and just, you know, rock concert lighting. And they have like 4K cameras and we're going to shoot a live stream with the Nixons and we're going to play a couple of songs that we haven't played in years, really deep cuts, something kind of new and different. Because again, with the live stream, like I said, it can't really replace a live show, an actual show, but you can make it special and make it different.
Oh yeah.
And so we're doing a couple of songs we haven't ever played live, or one of them we haven't played in 20 years or something. And then the bass player's brother, Andy Brooks, is going to edit it all together. So he had us go ahead and record dialogue of us, either a story, you know, our memories of being with the band, maybe a story about a song. And just so with the show, there'll be interludes with the band, different guys talking. Cause I saw this really cool live stream. I don't know if you saw them with STP. I'm a big Stone Temple Pilots fan, and they did Core and Purple, the album in their entirety, two different live streams, but they would break in between each song with these interludes of, it would be just like a static picture of a reel to reel box from the sessions from Core or whatever.
Oh my God,
and one of the guys awesome. Would be talking, would be like, you know, a memory of Scott or writing a song or a memory of making the album. And I thought, that's really cool. That's kind of special. You know, that's something different. It isn't just a band playing, you know?
Right. Oh man.
And so, yeah, I thought the Nixons, I think that would be a cool idea. And so we talked about it. And so each of the guys recorded, you know, just kind of talking about some stuff, and Andy's going to put it together. I think it's going to be a great, great video document. We're doing that with Veeps.
When so anybody you guys plan on doing that?
Yeah, so that'll be February 19th. And anybody who's interested, that's thenixons.veeps.com. And there's tickets there and packages. And but yeah, that'll be 7 p.m. Central Time, February 19th. So anybody interested, check it out.
Check it out, definitely, yeah. Now, for you, what's one major conflict or failure that you have faced while being a musician? And what did you do to overcome that?
Oh gosh. I think my biggest one would be my back surgery. Being a drummer and, you know, schlepping gear for years, you know, when you're in a band, you're just being a drummer. You've got more pieces, sometimes more stuff to carry, heavier stuff to carry. I owned a PA company at one time, way, way back. And so I hurt my back early on. I think it has a lot to do with drummers and how we sit, low center of gravity, the whole thing. So I had a disc in my lower back completely crumble and just, it gave way. This would be about 2006. And Seether was right in the midst of, you know, breaking. Remedy was out. We were touring nonstop. And I, you know, to have surgery like that, you have to recover for several months. And I just put it off forever. So finally, after in between Karma and Effect and Finding Beauty, we had about a 4 or 5 month break. And my doctor told me we can do a fusion, which is where they take out that crumbled disc, they fill it, and they put in a bracket to kind of hold you together in your lower back. And he goes, it'll take you 9 or 10 months to recover. Ugh. And I go, well, I don't have that time. Do you think I can, you know, with therapy, physical therapy, come back? And he goes, well, it'll be up to you. I was in so much pain. I had to do the surgery. So I did the surgery. They did the bracket. Like I said, I did physical therapy. My doctor was blown away. Like I said, usually it's 9 or 10 months to recoup and recover. And I did it in three and a half, actually. I had surgery in December of 06. And by March of 07, we were tracking Finding Beauty and I was playing drums. And the guys were very supportive, but they were, you know, also, you know, is he going to be able to do it? Is he going to be back? Is he going to be able to play? Obviously, I was motivated. I didn't want to leave Cedar. I didn't want my time with them to end. I wanted to be part of it and I needed to get my back fixed. And I did that. And it was a huge physical ordeal. And, you know, the timing was horrible, obviously, but I had to I was in so much pain. It just something I had to do. I did an article with Modern Drummer. They did a feature on me talking about that whole thing because it was quite an ordeal and process for me to come back. And I did it in such a quick time. But yeah, I would say that was my big, you know, huge physical hurdle to overcome and go through to, you know, come out on the other end.
Especially, you know, if they were to have postponed it to about now, you know, if the pandemic was back at that time, that'd have been perfect timing because you'd have all the time in the world, you know?
Yeah, that would have been ideal, right? That would have been the time to do it.
So other than drums, what are some hobbies that you're into?
Well, me, I'm a big music collector, vinyl collector, and I love vinyl. So on my days off, I love going to see record stores. So, you know, like I was telling you, my parents noticed early on when I was a little kid, I loved music. So from my earliest memories, I had a portable record player and a handful of records my parents gave me, like my first records. So all through high school, I had vinyl. Like I was talking earlier, I had cassettes and of course CDs like everybody gets, but I never got rid of my records. Every time my wife and I would move from apartment to apartment to house, I never got rid of my records. And then vinyl made a comeback, really huge, about 10 years ago or so now. And this huge resurgence. And I'm glad to say it's even gotten more involved with me. I just, you know, now with Discogs and everything, eBay. And I love, it's one thing. Another thing I miss about being on the road is those days off. I'll go to an antique shop. I'll go to a record store. I love digging through crates, a flea market. I'll hop into an Uber, man. Take off and go dig through records. And I've done that all over the world. And I really miss that about the days off on the road. That's like my thing. And I love collecting vinyl. I have a couple turntables set up. And I've even been doing a local radio show, vinyl radio show here in Oklahoma City once a week with a program director. He's also a big vinyl collector. And he invited me to come be a part of this show. So we've been doing that once a week during the pandemic. And it's just an hour of music on Sunday mornings. And we play vinyl. We each play 5 tracks, our favorite stuff. We'll come up with a theme or an idea, a band, or like just, you know, today we did a Super Grohl show, all Grohl involved, you know, because of the new Foo Fighters album.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a badass album.
Yeah, man. I love the new one. And I brought my Queens of the Stone Age and them Crooked Vultures and Nirvana and, you know, just played Dave Grohl stuff and told, you know, some stories like, you know, earlier from when I met him and talking about Tommy Lee and stuff. But anyway, I love it. You know, vinyl is like my thing, you know. And then other than that, it's being a dad. You know, yeah. I've got 2 boys and my oldest, he's a young man now. He's 21. My other one's 16. And but that's one thing that's been good that's come out of this pandemic is this is the most I've ever been home in their lives. The most I've ever been home in my entire career. And it's been really great to be home with them for a little bit, you know.
Are they following after your footsteps? Do they like to play drums?
They are. My oldest is a drummer. And then Jet, my youngest, he's a bass player. And in fact, they both played last night at Jet's high school. They performed together. They just a 2-piece thing, sort of a royal blood kind of thing. And it was really cool. But I love seeing, you know, that love of music being passed on to them, you know. Absolutely. That they appreciate, they love it too, you know. And from the time they were way little, they used to come, they were coming to see Cedar. Jackson being a drummer when he was 15, he got up on stage and did Remedy with Cedar. in front of 10,000 people here in Oklahoma City. And he got up there and he owned it like he'd been doing it his whole life, you know? And yeah, it's pretty amazing to see the talent they have and just to see their love of music and for it to carry on like that. I think it's really cool.
So for you, if it wasn't for music, what would your plan B have been, do you think?
God, man, I have no idea. I mean, I don't know if there was a plan B. I mean, this is all I've ever known. I mean, I was going to college a little bit. I tried, I loved art, I loved drawing, and I also liked mechanical side of things, at least as far as schematics. So I tried drafting and architecture for a little bit, but I was not going to class because I had a band that would play, you know, at a venue or a bar the night before, and we wouldn't get home till 3 a.m. And so I was missing class, and, you know, it just wasn't in the cards for me. And it's just always been music, and it's just been the main thing. And then, you know, if not literally being a musician, and, you know, it'll be, you know, I don't know, maybe I'd have a record store or something because, yeah, you know, again, I love vinyl and I love music. I love being around music. I love talking about music. So maybe if I wasn't playing and performing it, maybe I'd have a record store or something. It definitely would have something to do with music for sure.
With your boys doing that too, you know, like you said, just the two of them, do you think that they're going to eventually stem off and start an actual band?
Yeah. I mean, who's to say, you know, I'd love for them to continue playing. I hope they do, you know, like I said, my youngest, he's got one more year of high school. He's a junior and then he'll be a senior. My oldest will graduate college this next year. So, yeah, man, I think that, you know, something about brothers, right? You know, it's like the Eddie and Alex Van Halen or Vinny and Dime, yep, you know, something about that telepathy and that connection that, you know, brothers have. And it's really special. And I hope, you know, and I think it's, you know, it's pretty ingrained in them too. If they aren't together, they'll be playing music, you know, somewhere, you know.
Definitely. Well, before we wrap this up, man, I just want to say again, appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. It was sure a pleasure getting to know more about your experience with Seether, joining them, and then a little bit about the Nixons. Before we jump off here, is there anything you want to say to anybody listening?
No, man, just, you know, thank you for the support for Seether and the Nixons, you know, fans of both. I really appreciate it. I feel very fortunate and blessed, man. I really do. I don't take any of it for granted. I feel very fortunate that I've been able to do this for a living, to have been able to do it so long. And I just appreciate, you know, the fans and the people that have supported it, who still care about a new Seether album coming out and love the new music. And it's just so gratifying. And yeah, just thank you for the support. And then just as far as a final plug, just again, that Nixon's live stream, just go to Veeps and check it out. You can even go to the nixonsofficial.com and there's a website there and information on the live stream as well. So yeah, and the Nixons are doing new music too, just an EP last year called Sonic Boom. So I love being in both these bands. I love playing music, and I appreciate the support, man. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem, buddy.